During the time, both when I was in school learning my trade in the Air Force and the time that I was on the job, I met people who had taken part in crash disk recoveries, and usually at the Airman's Club or in some bar downtown or someplace, because I was a young man then and that's where you could usually find me, with a beer in my hand looking for a girl. And if there wasn't a girl around, we lied to each other a lot. And generally, these stories I thought to be a lie until later years when I realized that these guys had been telling me the truth, and I could kick myself in the head because I had not written it down. I had not pressed them for more information at a time when they were willing to talk to me for some reason or other. When I left the Air Force, I went into the Navy, and really I planned to just skip from service to service. I was a pretty crazy young kid. I was gung-ho. I was raised with John Wayne movies and Sergeant Rock comic books. I came from a military family. My whole family was in the military service. Uncles, grandfathers, brother, everybody. We were service people. We were government people. We were patriots. We cared. We believed that the best thing that a man or a woman could do was to serve their country. When I went in the Navy, I volunteered for submarines because that was the weirdest thing you could do. And I was pretty weird. And I thought it would be neat to sleep underwater. So I did. While I was on submarines, being junior in the Navy, real junior, I had to stand lookout watches. Lookouts are well-trained professional observers. They are not just someone that they grab out of the galley and stick it there with a pair of binoculars. You are well trained, because before you yell to the officer of the deck that you got to shoot at something coming at you off the port beam, you got to know that that's really the enemy and not the admiral coming out for a visit. And that's really the main reason for it. So we were trained observers. Now this is extremely important. Me personally, because without this experience, I probably would not have lent the importance that the later information that I was going to see, I probably would not have realized how important it was. While on lookout between the Portland, Seattle area and the Pearl Harbor area, while we were traveling on the surface as port lookout, I saw a craft the size of an aircraft carrier exit the water at a range of approximately 2.5 nautical miles off the port quarter. The port quarter is approximately 45 relative degrees off the port bow. Port is your left. Left, port wine is red. That's where the red light is on a ship. Okay, now we got through that. I was stunned. I knew that I had just seen something that was absolutely incredible, and nobody in the world would believe that I saw it, and nobody else saw it. And I was faced with a dilemma. I'm the port lookout. Something just came up out of the water that could destroy us in a second. It was a machine. It was intelligently guided. I knew this. It was as big as an aircraft carrier. It was the most important, earth-shattering thing that had ever happened to me in my life. Because I saw it, I realized what it was. I knew I wasn't dreaming. There was nobody around who could be manipulating me in any way, shape, or form. And it was my responsibility to report this. Are you kidding? I'm going to tell the man who writes my performance report that I just saw this thing come out of the water? You've got to be nuts. But I had a responsibility to the safety of the ship, the boat, which we call submarines boats, not ships, to the boat and to the crew. So I had to devise a method to report this. And what I did was that I told the officer of the deck, Ensign Ball, said, Ensign Ball, I saw something about 2.5 nautical miles off the port quarter, but it just flashed and I don't know what it was. Could you please help me scour that area to see if we can find it again? Now, I didn't really believe that this thing was going to show up again at all. Well, the starboard lookout heard this conversation, and he turned around and started looking too, which he shouldn't have done, because you're never supposed to desert your own field of responsibility, but he did. At about that time, the object came, or this object, or another one just like it, came back down out of the clouds and entered the water. Ensign Ball dropped his binoculars, dropped his jaw, and turned around and just stared at me and didn't say a word. And then he turned back around and he just stared off into space for a couple of minutes. And then he turned around and looked at me again. And he said, "This had to happen on my watch." He then called the captain to the bridge, which on any naval vessel means that there is an emergency in progress. You do not call the captain to the bridge unless there is an emergency situation, unless his presence is needed. If you call the captain to the bridge and his presence is not needed, you are in deep, deep, deeper than the submarine will dive to trouble. And it's lucky they didn't have submarines in the old Navy when they keel-hauled people. Now, the captain came to the bridge, and so did the chief quartermaster, because it was his job to come to the bridge with the captain, with a 35-millimeter camera, anytime anything like this happened. This event repeated itself several times over a 7 to 10 minute period, and we watched it. They would exit the water, go and disappear in the clouds, and then another ship, or the same ship, would re-enter the water. Eventually, it stopped. We were told by the captain, before we left the con, the bridge, not to discuss it with the other crew members, that it was classified top secret, and that we were never to mention it to anyone. Now, the crew knew about it. How they knew about it, I don't know, but I suspect that it was picked up on sonar and radar also, in which case the sonarman and the radarman would know about it too. And I believe that is what has happened, and I believe that they were also told not to talk to anyone. But several crew members came up to me and wanted to know if we really saw a UFO, and I told them that I was not allowed to discuss what happened, and I didn't know what I saw anyway. So that was the end of that. I did tell a good friend about it years later. When we arrived in Pearl Harbor, an officer from the Office of Naval Intelligence came on board and debriefed each one of us independently of the others. I do not know what went on in the debriefings of the other personnel involved, but when I went in, he began to ask me what I saw. When I began to describe to him what I saw, he became very upset, even enraged. And having come from a military family, having a father who was an Air Force pilot and an officer, having served 4 years in the Air Force, I knew what this man wanted to hear. It was obvious to me. So I told him what he wanted to hear so that I didn't have to go through with what I knew I would have to go through if I told him anything else. So I told him, "Sir, I did not see anything. I don't know what you're talking about." And he said, "That's the spirit." I had to sign a security oath. I was dismissed, told that I was a good sailor, had a good future with the Navy, and I left. On the way out, Seaman DiGirolamo was braced up against the bulkhead in the passageway, and I whispered to him, "Tell him you didn't say anything." And I don't know whether he did or not, because we never talked about it again amongst ourselves. Several years later, I was trained again. Well, in between this, I struck, or striking is what you call trying out for a certain particular job. I was striking for quartermaster, which is navigation. It's where you navigate whatever ship or vessel you're on. I made it, was promoted to third class quartermaster. Eventually was promoted to second class quartermaster. I was then trained by Naval Intelligence in my secondary NEC, which is 9545, which is internal security, I was then sent to Vietnam, where I was given a multi-million dollar patrol boat. I was given 5 other lives to take care of, and mother, and be a friend to, and be a daddy to, and everything else. And was given a river and everybody that lived on both sides of that river, and said, Bill, go out and kick their butts. And while you're out there, try to collect as much intelligence as you can, try to learn as much as you can from the local people, try to make friends with them, keep the river safe and secure, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. While I was there, I learned that there was much UFO activity in Vietnam, an awful lot of UFO activity. They were called, in official reports, helicopters, enemy helicopters. Well, anyone who knows anything about Vietnam, if you look in documents released about Vietnam under the Freedom of Information Act, you will find many reports of any enemy helicopters attacking our troops, attacking the enemy's troops, taking villagers away from their villages. The truth is, ladies and gentlemen, North Vietnam had no helicopters, period. It was really UFO activity. When I came back to the United States, I was assigned to the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet, and was specifically assigned to the intelligence briefing team for Admiral Bernard Clary, who at that time was the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet. While serving in this official capacity, I had occasion to prepare briefings on flaps. You know what a flap is? I mean, something's happening right now, and it's very important, and everybody's concerned about it, and all the admirals are in the command center, and they want to know what the hell is going on, and they want up-to-date information, and they want the plots correct, and they want to know who's over here, and what's the closest ship, and how fast can we get a United States Marine unit there. That's what you call a flap. In other words, everybody's throwing it all in the fan, and it's all coming out on me and the other people who were with me. It was our job to provide this information on a 24-hour basis. And specifically, every day, we would come in very early in the morning, about 4 a.m., and we would prepare a briefing, which took place at between 8 and 9 o'clock, whenever the admiral was ready, because we didn't tell him when to be there. He told us when he was there, and when he was there, we had to be ready. Between 8 and 9 o'clock, usually, we would present a briefing to the admiral and his chiefs of staff. Now, you have to remember that this man had reason to know what was going on in half of the world, because he's literally responsible for the Pacific Ocean and the Indian Ocean and everything in between, including the land masses. In case of a nuclear attack or nuclear war or any kind of a war, it is the United States Navy that will deal the primary blow to the enemy, will deliver the war to the enemy first, and will usually carry it through to the end. And that is the truth. So he had the need to know everything that happened in that part of the world. When alien-connected incidents occurred, we would get top secret messages marked MAGIC, restricted information. That is not an obsolete security classification. And the first time it was used was not in the Nixon years. It has been used on alien connected material since the beginning. So don't believe everything you hear. When we got these messages, usually all hell would break loose. It was of the utmost importance. When we were briefing officers who were new in the position that they had the need to know regarding this flaps, we sometimes had to brief them on the history that led up to this incident. So then I had access to documents containing the history. Until eventually, I found in my hands a document called Operation Majority and another document called Project Grudge, which contained the most astounding information I have ever seen in my life. And from that day forward, my life has never been the same. It has not been normal in any way. And I wish that it had been somebody else who had seen the information. But because no one else has had the guts to stand up and talk about what they've seen, I'm kind of glad that it was me, because I do have, and I will continue. Because you need to know what was in those documents and what's happening. Now, if I had not seen the UFO with my own eyes first, I would have thought that this whole scenario that I saw in these documents was a hoax. Not perpetrated by the Navy or the Office of Naval Intelligence or the United States government to fool me or to fool anybody else in the Navy. I would have thought it was a hoax after I had read Operation Majority that outlined the plans for the secret government, the secret world government, to come into power. I would have thought that it was a hoax to scare you into bringing that about. And I still think that they're going to use it to try to bring it about. And I want to warn you beforehand not to believe a word they tell you when they tell you there's going to be an invasion from outer space. Because there's not going to be. It's already taken place. Because I saw what I saw on board that submarine, and because of the research that I've conducted since then, I know that it's real, it's not a hoax, it's not something to propel this world government into position. It's real. There's aliens here. They're just as real as you and I. And I'm here to tell you about it. And there are other people talking about it, and there have been throughout the history of this thing, only, especially in the early years, anybody who tried to talk were killed, were sent to mental institutions, just flat disappeared, and they never knew what happened to them. Or all of a sudden, Joe Blow was working in a garage, and now he's got a nice job in the government, making three times what he was making in that garage, and he doesn't talk to you anymore. Those things were commonplace. They have still been commonplace up to the present time, except in recent years, people are starting to learn how to prevent it from happening. And one of the ways is you get squarely in front of the public and you stay there. Because I'm going to tell you this right now, and you can bank on it. You watch me every day of my life. If anything happens to me, you don't have to do any more research. You know damn well everything I'm telling you is true. And they don't want you to know that. So they're not going to touch me unless they can make it look like an accident where you will believe that it's an accident. And I'm telling you right now, they know how to make people die of heart attacks, strokes, brain hemorrhages. They know how to make people fall down the stairs. They know how to make people commit suicide, or at least look like they committed suicide. And if you don't believe that, look at what happened to the 20 material witnesses who were close enough to the car to see William Greer shoot President Kennedy within 2 years of the time it happened. They're all dead. The odds of them all being dead is something like 300,000 trillion to one. Some of them apparently, I say apparently because that word means that's what it looks like, committed suicide. One died of a karate chop to the neck. Several of them had heart attacks, etc., etc., etc. One man hung himself. They were all murdered. All of them. They were murdered by the Central Intelligence Agency. William Greer was the assassin who killed President Kennedy. He was a Secret Service agent. I'm going to show you the film here shortly. Many of you wonder, well, if that's really true, how come Jackie Kennedy never said anything? If the Secret Service, the highest protective body in the United States assigned to protect the President of the United States, just shot President Kennedy, who in the hell is she going to tell? Me? I can't do anything except tell you. The FBI? J. Edgar Hoover is one of the men who ordered his assassination. He was a member of MJ-12. Beginning to see the picture? Picture's not a pretty one.